Good afternoon. Thank you all for coming. Today I'm going to be talking to you about a component of my dissertation research, which is using population genomics as a tool to improve monitoring and management of the boll weevil in northern Mexico and south Texas. Before I jump into the meat of my talk, I'd like to first acknowledge my co-authors, my advisor Greg Sword, and our USDA collaborators Charles Suh and Raul Ruiz Arce. Our funding for this project has come from USDA, APHIS, Cotton Incorporated, Cotton Foundation, and some travel support was provided by International Cotton Advisory Committee. I'd also like to acknowledge Rick Metz and Michael Dickens, who have been essential for a lot of the sequencing and bioinformatics work that we've done. I really couldn't have done any of this project without them. And Juan Landabar has been helping us coordinate some international efforts to get some boll weevils from other areas of the world. So I'm going to first talk about boll weevil persistence in South Texas. It's a kind of an older pest that a lot of people have not forgotten about, but some of the younger generation doesn't know why I'm studying this species still. Then I'll talk about metapopulation dynamics and how that relates to pest management. The bulk of the talk will be at the actual population genomics of boll weevil in South Texas and northern Mexico. Then I'll wrap it up with the application to management and our ongoing work and future directions for this project. So the boll weevil is Anthonomus grandis. It was first reported in Texas in 1892. Since its introduction to the United States, it's cost about $13 billion worth of damage to the industry, and that comes out to about $300 million per year, and that's a combined cost of yield losses as well as control costs. So because of that significant economic impact, there was the USDA boll weevil eradication program developed in 1978 to combat Anthonomus grandis, and that was one of the first area-wide IPM approaches that was implemented in this country on a large scale, and it was widely considered a huge ecological and agricultural success that resulted in essentially the eradication of the boll weevil from the United States. However, despite the success of this program, the boll weevil does remain a concern in South Texas and therefore to the rest of the country because that is, the potential entry corridor of reinfestations of this thing. So it's kind of the front line of the battle in maintaining this eradication. There's a couple of reasons that the boll weevil persists so strongly in South Texas, the primary reason being that it's a favorable habitat for Anthonomus grandis. There's very mild winters, and there's also a lot of different host plants, whether that is wild or volunteer cotton in those areas. There's also a few other genera of plants that make suitable overwintering hosts for the species, so that makes it really, really tough to control. There's also control discrepancies across the border. This image here, you see that we have a cotton growing area in the lower Rio Grande Valley in South Texas. Right across the border is Tamaulipas, where you have a cotton area growing area in Mexico. And proximity of these areas and control discrepancies, make it very difficult to prevent insect movement across the border. Obviously, these insects don't care where the border is, and they move pretty freely in this area. There's also complications related to the presence of non-pest variants of the boll weevil, and that's something else we're looking at, but I don't really have time to go into that today. But if you're interested in that, I can talk about that with you later. So because of these problems, we felt that there was a need for a modern molecular approach that could, one, distinguish and delimit between populations of the boll weevil, as well as infer gene flow movement between populations of the boll weevil. And so you may be asking yourselves, well, why do population dynamics matter to pest management? And it really relates to metapopulation dynamics. So metapopulations are characterized by this recurrent local extinction and recolonization. And this is frequently takes the form of a source sink dynamic, where you have some populations that are providing migrants to other areas where the population wouldn't otherwise persist without migrants. And so when you're treating your field, you need to consider this functionally relevant population, because what can end up happening is you actually create a sink area by treating your field, but if you're not treating the surrounding areas or if there's something not being treated on the other side of the border, you might actually have this source population that's actually causing your problem, and you're wasting money and you're not going to have significant long-term control unless you consider this functionally relevant population unit. So our goal is to use population genomics to kind of find those relevant population units. Population genomics is just essentially population genetics on a whole genome scale. So the advent of high throughput sequencing has made it possible for us to generate a very high number of markers, which gives you a couple advantages. One being that there's many more markers gives you much better resolution, so you can tease out more minor differences between populations. and it also gives you more power with your statistical analyses. So this is a generalized workflow that we use for all of our population genomics. This has been applied to some other, I also do some work with Flea Hopper, I'll be giving a talk on that tomorrow, and this is the same workflow that we use for that project as well. Generally, our strategy is to collect around 30 individuals per population of interest. That's a pretty standard number for population genetics. We carry out a standard DNA extraction, and we use a technique called DD-RadSeq, which is a really highly replicable method of generating markers. And after some pretty rigorous quality control and processing, we use the software Stax to analyze those markers to find out which ones are going to be informative for population genetic analyses, such as, analyses of GenePop or structure or some R packages. And then based on what we learn from those analyses, we can then make recommendations to the management based on our new knowledge of the population dynamics. So the main goal of this study is to resolve the population genomic structure of the boll weevil in northern Mexico in order to improve management along the border and in South Texas. And we want to do this in two specific ways. One is to first identify those functionally relevant population units so that we can have better targeted management, and also to identify the source populations of reinfestations should they occur in areas where the boll weevil has been previously eradicated. And that's become particularly relevant recently in Texas. We've had an outbreak in the Uvalde area, so that's something we're looking at integrating into our future work. This is our current sampling of individuals from five different populations, four populations in Mexico and one in the lower Rio Grande Valley here on the Texas side of the border. So we do have some low sample sizes in Sonora, Chihuahua, and Durango, and that was mostly because at this point in the project, all of this data was collected in 2015. We didn't really have a good relationship with the people who were doing the actual weevil collecting at that time, so the samples weren't very well curated, but we have received a lot more better curated samples in 2016, so we will be getting these numbers much higher for the second round of analyses. But we do have pretty good sampling from the lower Rio Grande Valley. We have 18 individuals there and 16 individuals from the Tamaulipas region. So the question is, are these five populations many distinct populations, or are they all kind of persisting in their own little bubble? Or do we have one large pan-mixed population where you have gene flow between these populations? Alternatively, is there source sink dynamics at play where, in this example, the Durango area would be a potential source that's providing migrants to these other areas? And any one of these areas could be a source or a sink. This is just an example of one source sink hypothesis. So as I mentioned, we use DD-RadSeq, or double digest restriction site-associated DNA sequencing, to generate our markers for this project. We sequenced those 48 individuals that I showed you on the map using Illumina HiSeq, and we generated 100 base pair length reads paired end. This is all carried out at the Texas A&M AgriLife Genomics and Bioinformatics Service. And from that data, we were able to pull out roughly 14,000 loci, 6,901 of which were informative loci for population genetic analyses. And if you'd like to know more about the parameters and the quality scores that I use to carry out these analyses, I'd be happy to talk to you all about that after the talk, or later after the session. And then from Stax, which did the actual SNP calling, I output the data to GenePop and SNP Relate to carry out some analyses. So the first thing I'd like to show you here is a summary table of all five populations, but also all populations pooled. There's two things I want you to take away from this table. The first is that if you look at heterozygosity and measures of nucleotide diversity, in these populations where we had low sampling, the estimates are roughly the same as those in where we had a higher sampling. So that indicates to us that we didn't really miss any diversity in those low sample populations, because these are generally low diversity populations overall. And the second thing I'd like you to look at is that if you look at all populations, you have a higher nucleotide diversity than in any one of the component populations. So that indicates that there's probably some sort of genetic structure, some population genetic structure. And we can test this using pairwise FST analysis, and we've also done some significance testing on these comparisons. So what these FST values are our estimates of gene flow, so higher FST values indicates less gene flow between populations. And what we see here is that we have two populations that have a non-significant FST, a non-significant comparison, indicating that those populations are actually have quite a bit of gene flow between them, especially here in this Tamaulipas and lower Rio Grande Valley area. This is a very, very low FST, indicating that these are really, even though we have two sampling sites, these are really one contiguous population. We can visualize this using a principal components analysis. So this is PC1 by PC2. And what you see here is that we have three clusters of populations, a western population cluster that's made up by the Sonora population, the central population cluster, which is made up of the Durango and Chihuahua populations, and an eastern population cluster, which is made up of the Tamaulipas and lower Rio Grande Valley populations. And if you relate this back to the geography of our sampled sites, you can very clearly see we have this western population cluster here on the west coast, and we have this mountain range that separates it from these kind of desert Chihuahua and Durango populations here, another mountain range, and then you have this east coast population here. So with these five populations that we've sampled, we've identified three population clusters that really need to be the targets of management, because if you treat weevils in Chihuahua or if you treat weevils in the lower Rio Grande Valley, you're going to have migrants coming from Durango or Tamaulipas, and your long-term effect of your management may not be as successful as if you had targeted these clusters as the treatment unit. And this is roughly consistent with some previous work that did not look at the Sonoran populations, but did find genetic differences with some older markers between the Chihuahuan and East Coast populations. So the application to management, as I said, is that we've now identified these three population groups that really need to be the focus of management in order to have the best effect of management in the long term. But we've also created a bank for identifying source populations for reinfestations should they occur anywhere in Texas or elsewhere, and this has become particularly relevant with a recent outbreak in Uvalde, Texas. So this is an area showing Uvalde up here in the left-hand corner, Batesville down to Dilley, and these are all sites where there have been boll weevils trapped within the past year. And so we haven't genotyped these samples yet, but one of our big goals for this next round of sequencing that we're planning on doing, in addition to including new samples from Mexico, is to also include these Uvalde weevils, genotype those, and see which of these three population clusters those match, if any. We expect them to match one of those three based on geography, but it is possible they came from somewhere else. So what really makes this kind of study most powerful is if we have a better geographic sampling of boll weevil from across its entire range. So we do have some collaborators in Brazil and Colombia who have agreed to send us samples, so we'll be expanding our geographic sampling into those countries. We also have some samples of Anthonomus mystitus from Peru, and Ted Borotansky helped me collect some Thurberi weevils from Arizona. And so we should also be able, in addition to separating out populations of the boll weevil and identifying the sources for potential reintroductions, we'll also be able to search for diagnostic loci that might be able to help differentiate between these non-pest variants and these pest boll weevils. Lastly, we're also involved in a genome sequencing project for this species, so we're trying to sequence the entire genome of the boll weevil so that we can enable some future population genomic studies as well. But I don't have time to go into that today, but it is something I'm excited about and have been working on. So I just thought I'd mention that we are also working on that as well. So with that, I'd just like to re-acknowledge my collaborators and my co-authors and my funding sources. And with that, I will take any questions. Thank you.
Questions for Tyler?
Yeah, so as far as I know, the major way that weevils get moved around from population to population is actually through equipment, because they're harvesting in different areas at different times, and the equipment gets moved around, and sometimes that transports weevils. They are also known to disperse in response to weather patterns, like significant weather patterns, strong winds, big storms. Those can also blow these things around quite a bit as well.
Okay, if you have other questions, you can see him later. Thank you very much, Tyler.
Thank you.